Welcome or welcome back to the Uncomfortable is Okay podcast. I'm your host, Chris Desmond. This is a show where we try and figure out how to get better at doing the hard stuff that makes life exciting. I'm joined today by Gareth Edwards. Now, Gareth and his mate Tom hold the unofficial world record for flipping a 93kg tyre for 24 hours non-stop, which is pretty awesome and it's pretty intense. But what is even more intense is what Gareth is going to try and do by himself in a few months' time. He's taking that same 93kg tyre and he is going to be flipping it for 60 hours. The reason that he's picked flipping it for 60 hours is to raise awareness of the 60 men worldwide who take their own lives every minute. I'll let that sink in for a little bit. So this is really raising awareness of mental health, especially men's mental health. It's a pretty phenomenal feat. Gareth is pretty sure he can pull it off, but he's not 100% sure. So he's really looking to push both his physical boundaries, but also his mental boundaries as well, and how he deals with going through this process and going through this ordeal. And today we're chatting around that stuff, around preparing himself mentally, around what it means to him and how he's looking at going into dark places as he does something like this. So really hope that you get a lot out of today's conversation. Thank you guys all so much for tuning in to Get Uncomfortable with Gareth and I today. Gareth Edwards, welcome to the Uncomfortable is Okay podcast. Thanks so much for joining me, mate.
Thanks for having me, man.
Gareth, I usually like just to kick things off by asking people, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the UK, so you'll kind of tell by my accent, it's a little bit muddled. I moved to New Zealand when I was 15, so fairly young. Came out of a little town called Ormskirk, which is about 20 minutes outside of Liverpool, and came out here with my family when I was 15, and moved to the North Shore of Auckland, and grew up here on the shore, went to Long Bay College. I was a shore boy through my teen years. Been in New Zealand ever since.
What formative experiences growing up do you think of, looking back on them, have shaped you on the path that you're on today?
Good question. Probably, you know, I came from a broken home. So my parents split up when I was fairly young. My dad was an alcoholic. Didn't see him for a large proportion of my younger teen years, sort of, you know, that sort of developmental part of who you are, sort of growing up as a man. Didn't have a very fatherly figure in my life. And then mum got remarried and we moved out to New Zealand, so uprooted from all that I knew, you know, school growing up, and you know, friends and friendship bonds that you build, and moved to New Zealand, which at 15, I didn't really know where New Zealand was. You know, I knew where Australia was because my uncle had just moved there. But New Zealand, I couldn't point to it on a map. So yeah, we were uprooted and brought down to the bottom of the world, which was really tough as a teen, fairly angsty teen. You know, parents are separated and, you know, lots of emotions and hormones are surging through your body. And then you're now living in a different country where you're a foreigner. So fitting in was something that I became very good at doing, learning to assess the collective that I was in. I went to Northcote College in my fifth form year, did 6 months at Northcote College. I was probably a handful of white kids, maybe, you know, one in two or three that was English, the rest Maori, Pacific Island, Asian. So I had an accent. I stuck out like dog's balls. You know, I had a funny accent coming from Merseyside, or, you know, parts of Merseyside. They didn't really understand my accent. They couldn't spell my name. They didn't really know what I was saying. So fitting in was kind of tough back then. So it kind of made me a tougher kid. I had a point to prove, which I think has sort of carried on through my younger adult life. Always trying to sort of, you know, make sure I fit in to groups and become what the group wanted me to be, I guess.
And like, I definitely feel kind of similarities with some of your story there, mate. I mean, we moved around a lot when I was growing up as well. So it was fitting into a new place sort of on a regular-ish basis. Did you find that that often you would kind of go against what you felt you wanted to do, or you felt was maybe right to fit into the group dynamic?
No, like I've always sort of fairly been headstrong in that, you know, that's what I'm doing. But, you know, I would, you know, I hung out with the pot smoking surf kids, so, you know, I invariably learned to surf, and that led to, you know, recreational cannabis use and that kind of thing. And then, you know, really, I came to New Zealand, I'd picked up Muay Thai at the age of 12, had my first competitive bout when I was 13. So I'd always had fitness, and my mum was in the gym industry and was a fitness instructor. So I always had health and wellness. My dad was a professional football player back in his heyday. So I was always fairly active, and coming here, trying to fit in, you kind of find the first crowd that accepts you. And then I realized that, hold on, this is not really what I'm about. I don't really enjoy this crowd. And then found the kind of jocks of the school, and then, you know, did that kind of thing. And I fit in because I played sport, and, you know, came from a fairly tough environment. Like the streets of Ormskirk aren't, you know, it's not, you know, it's not New York, it's not Chicago, they're not mean streets by any stretch of the imagination, but I could handle myself, and, you know, played rugby with big Ireland boys, and got stuck in just as much as they stuck into me. So earned a little bit of respect from the bigger lads, going, this white boy, this skinny white boy, he's either crazy or he's tough. Not quite sure which, but yeah, went sort of that way, got out of that kind of, you know, the bad crowd, and got into kind of the sports scene. And that's kind of, I've always gone back there with the sport.
Yes. Have you moved away from the sports side of things, or
I did for a little while. It was, you know, as growing up, you find girls, you find parties, find surfing. You know, I did that all the way through my late teens, early 20s, right up until I had knee surgery in my early 20s. But yeah, sport was always a big part, and then just different modes of it. I played football. You know, I was an English kid just outside of Liverpool. I was born holding a football, I think, just like Kiwi kids here are born holding rugby balls. It's, you know, it's an institution. So yeah, kind of flirted backwards and forwards with playing in various places that I lived, Bay of Plenty, all that kind of thing. Always kind of going away from it and then coming back to it, because it's just in my DNA, I think. And then discovering things like bodybuilding. I did that for a stint, then found my way back to fighting, got back into training in martial arts, and right up until my late 20s, early 30s.
What happened there from a sporting side of things? Was that just when you gave fighting away, or?
It was something combative like that, where there's contact, same as, you know, rugby players, league. Again, had the same conversation today with a guy, you know, there's a shelf life to full contact sports. And, you know, my body, the mind was willing, but the body just wasn't really holding up anymore, especially at a competitive level that, you know, I wanted to maintain. It just wasn't, my body just wasn't there anymore. You know, I've had several injuries and knee surgeries, like I said, I've had multiple knee surgeries now, and the body just wasn't holding up to the training regime. And it was a 8 day a week, 24/7 type of thing. And I couldn't do that anymore. I was starting to become a personal trainer. I was doing my studies, and I just, you know, I needed to kind of to move on from that part of my life.
And was it a pretty easy decision for you to make at the time to just walk away from it?
Yes. Yeah, I guess so. Anything that you're passionate about is pretty difficult to walk away from. But there was, like I said, there was stuff not in my control. Well, it was in my control in that I made a conscious decision to go, I can't do this to the level I want to do it anymore. And I'm sick of getting beatings. I'm tired of just being beaten up all the time. So it's kind of, you know, I still miss it now. I've got friends that do it. You know, I could watch UFC. I've watched UFC for years, and kind of like, oh, if only, you know, I could make a run at it now. And I'm like, who am I kidding?
yeah. Like, I know what you're feeling with that. I played rugby for 20 years, and like, I got to the to the end of it. And like I'd play on the weekend and then I'd just spend the rest of the week. My day job as a physio in the rehab gym, getting ready for the following weekend and then just do it all over again for the course of a 16, 20 week season.
Yeah. I think I need to, there's lots of guys that do it without the sort of competitive need. They don't need to compete in that kind of arena. I think as I get older, that seems more appealing to me now, but maybe find something a little bit more gentle being kicked in the face.
One of my uncles does BJJ and I was talking to him about it, and because he's had a couple of knee surgeries and he was like, oh yeah, I go down and have a roll every now and then. It's like, but I do fat man's jujitsu. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, I just basically sit on the floor to start and have them come at me. And basically it's just on the floor. And he's like, and I just look after my body that way. And it's good fun. Right. Yeah. So yeah, look for the fat man sport.
There's still that itch. There's still that fire inside me. And like I said, you know, with doing the tie flipping last year, Tom had discovered jujitsu and he was getting right into it. And oh, you should come down for a roll. I'm like, yeah, I've always been a stand-up exponent. Like I've always enjoyed my kickboxing, my Muay Thai. I'm very good at it. Even, you know, holding pads for clients, I'm just like, oh, I can just put the gloves back on and, you know, it wouldn't take long to kind of sharpen that tool again. But yeah, I think I need to do something a little bit more slowly and yeah, get into something that's a little bit less damaging.
Yeah, true. You mentioned tire flipping in that last little bit there. And for the people that don't know about you and don't know what you got up to last year, do you want to give us a little bit of background about, so you're a Guinness World Record holder now, aren't you?
Yeah, so unofficial. We flipped a 93 kilo tire for 24 hours last year, all for the Sir John Kerwin Foundation. And as Tom and I spoke on Will's podcast, we both come from different but similar backgrounds in terms of both being strength coaches, both being in the health and wellness industry, Tom being a school teacher up here in Auckland at McLean's College. You know, so we had this, you know, we've got this message and we've got this physical ability. For the most part, you know, social media is very good in connecting people. It's how you and I have connected through social. But there's this kind of trend now on talking about mental health awareness. And I'm somebody of action. I set my mind to doing something, I go and do it. I don't talk about it. I don't, you know, I'm not one of these kind of, you know, blowing smoke up someone's ass about doing it. I just, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And this is what I'm going to do it for. And off I go. There's a lot of people out there on social media. They're all like, you know, need to raise awareness. Great. Okay. So we've raised awareness. What are we going to do now? And I reached out to Tom and said, hey man, this is what I think we should do. How would you feel about flipping it? I've done some research. How would you feel about flipping a tire for 24 hours and without missing a beat? Yeah, man, I'm in. And that started a 20 week journey of training for one of the biggest undertakings at that point of my life, both our lives. Tom lost a friend to suicide. Tom was diagnosed with depression in his early 20s. I've had some dark times myself for various reasons. And like I said, we're both in that sort of health arena. We're both coaches and we work with youth, and I've worked with youth athletes. I work with, you know, athletes, elite athletes now, and the mental side of things is a big part of what we do, right? Even as a physio, you know, there's a holistic element to, you know, your craft and your physiotherapy. You know, the mind has amazing powers of healing that we just are still untapped. We still don't know kind of just how much the mind can do. So yeah, it was a pretty easy Tom involved in the tie flipping. The Guinness World Record that we set out to do quickly became secondary. It was something that we set out to do, and it was the kind of the motivating factor. And then it quickly dawned on us that people were more responsive to the mental health aspect. They wanted to know that story and why we were doing it and why we chose the John Kerwin Foundation and all that kind of stuff.
Why did you guys decide, hey, I want to go and flip a tire for 24 hours?
It was a couple of things, couple of reasons. Two friends of ours walked 100 Ks for charity for charities that are both close to their heart, and we were kind of like, oh, that'll be, you know, it got the kind of juices flowing of, you know, maybe I need to do more than just that inspirational quote on Instagram. And then saw a post of David Goggins. Everyone knows David Goggins. So David Goggins flipped a tire for a mile in 55 minutes. And I was like, oh, I can do that. Turns out that's pretty hard. To sustain that pace for that amount of distance. I was like, right, okay, so there's the challenge. And said to Tom, hey, do you want to flip a tire? And he's like, yep. And I went in search of a tire big enough that we could travel the most distance and sustain a 24-hour time.
Interesting, interesting. You were saying that the motivations changed a little bit from when you started and then when you kind of kept going down the journey. What were the motivations? What did they finish up as? And how surprising was that for you on the way?
It was a huge emotional journey, the 20 weeks in general, just in terms of what it meant to other people that we were doing this. I don't think we were as prepared emotionally for the response we were going to get. We were getting messages from people all around the world commending us on doing this thing that, you know, we didn't have to do. Like, we didn't have to put our bodies and our minds and our friendship through this. We did this of our own volition. We chose to do this. And we were getting messages from people who were suffering from depression, anxiety, agoraphobia, that couldn't go outside, and many different things, that were just saying, you know, this is amazing that you guys are doing this for what you're doing it for. And, you know, it was really uplifting. That was the kind of the motivation that we needed. Like, the people that know me well, I'm fairly intrinsically motivated. I don't need coaches telling me what to do. I don't need, for the most part, outside influences guiding me. I decide I'm doing something and I'm doing it, and I'll make a path to that end goal. That's kind of how I work, how I've always worked. And it started out as the Guinness World Record, and it finished about raising the money and raising awareness and discovering about ourselves. It was a journey of self-discovery in terms of physical capabilities, of emotional capabilities, emotional vulnerability, going through that journey and, you know, finding out that you're not bulletproof, but coming out at the end going, we did that. I did that. Like, we went through hell together. We held each other up. We got through, you know, this massive feat together. We set out to do it and we accomplished it. But one thing, and I spoke about it this morning on the radio, we weren't prepared for the emotional fallout afterwards, I don't think. There was a huge come down. I know, particularly for me, and I've spoken about this at length to the people that are in my sort of close circle, you know, the emotional toll that took on me, organizing the event, everything that went around. Like, I've never put on an event of that size, of that magnitude before. Finding sponsors, dealing with the media, finding all the logistics around the Guinness World Record, and finding the witnesses and having it filmed for 24 hours and then raising the money as well. Like, I put on this massive, I put massive pressure on myself to raise the $10,000 for JK. We promised him 10 grand and I was going to do it, you know, come hell or high water, raise that money. And I've said it several times that it got to Saturday, the day of the event itself, and we'd only raised about $7,000 at that point. So we were shy of that target. And obviously all the emotions are there, the adrenaline, you know, it's the day of the event. It's the grand final for us. We've trained for this amount of time and this is our day. And to have this kind of disappointment that I hadn't quite made the $10,000 was pretty tough to be motivated to, what am I doing this for? But got my game face on and got through the 24 hours. And it got to about 45 minutes to go. And my really close friend and chiropractor friend Edward came to me and said, we've just ticked over $10,000. And I burst into tears. And this was the whole thing, you know, about emotional vulnerability. And I feel I'm a pretty stoic, tough, manly individual, and, you know, don't show weakness. And there was a crowd of people, friends, family, media, and I just burst into tears. I was uncontrollable. And it only took my good friend Harry, boxing coach friend of mine, Harry, to calm me down so I could finish. I was just a mess. All of this emotion came out about raising this money, that how much pressure I'd put on myself to pull off this event and train for it and, you know, do all the PR. And it just all came out at that moment. I wasn't prepared for that. It was one of the most emotional and freeing moments of my life.
That's awesome, man. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing that as well. It's like a lot of people wouldn't, especially a lot of guys in New Zealand and
yeah,
probably the UK as well, wouldn't feel open about sharing something like that as well. Going through that process and going through, like, I imagine that 24 hours flipping a tire is very physically hard, but probably even more mentally demanding and mentally draining to keep yourself going through that pain. Looking back on it, what are the big things that you learned about yourself during that lead up time, but also on the day?
Mental fortitude was something that I really got out of that, in terms of, you know, going through those dark times and physically and emotionally, you know, when there's lots of rah-rah at the beginning when everyone's there and cheering you on as you start. But then when stuff really gets hard and there's nobody around you, you know, at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and I'm still flipping the tire, you know, going to that place, you know, you've only really got yourself to kind of rely on, and that self-talk, and you've got to be really careful on what you say to yourself in those moments. And just remind yourself why you're doing it and what it's for. And there's, you know, hands are hurting, fingers are just, you know, torn to shreds. And there was plenty of times, you know, to say that I didn't want to quit would be lying. It was many, many times throughout that entire period, training and also the event itself, where I was like, you know what, this isn't worth it. This is putting a strain on me physically, emotionally. It's putting a strain on my business. It's putting a strain on my relationships, people around me, friendships. Like, why am I doing this? No one really cares. I could stop tomorrow and it doesn't really matter. And it was only until I watched Iron Cowboy with James Lawrence, who did the 50 triathlons in 50 days. And there was a line in his documentary where he said, make sure your reason to continue is stronger than your reason to quit. And I didn't realize it at the time. And I said something very similar to the Seven Sharp guys in terms of just moving forward, just continuing one step. That's all I'm focusing on. You know, when they talked to me 16 hours in, all I was focusing on was just that next step, just that next flip. I wasn't thinking about 20 hours. I wasn't thinking about the last hour or that last flip. I was just thinking about the flip right now and keeping my mindset about that flip and being present, being mindful of the things I'm saying to myself. And I think that's probably my biggest takeaway in terms of, you know, when things are going bad, business-wise, relationship-wise, friendship-wise, it's very easy to have that negative self-talk and, you know, this is my fault. This is, you know, self-blame. What could I have done better? It's really difficult to control those thoughts and those emotions. And that's kind of what I've learned out of that for the most part is, yeah, you know, I'm pretty tough physically. I'm more tough emotionally now than I was 6 months ago, but I had to go through that 24 hours to discover that.
And I understand that you guys worked with a mental skills coach in the lead up to that. Like,
yes,
with some of the stuff that you worked on, kind of managing your emotions and managing your mental state when you got into those dark spaces.
100%. Yeah. So we worked with David Neath, who works with large corporates. He works with elite athletes, Israel Adesanya, The Breakers, Lydia Ko, for the golfers out there. And he, you know, we had multiple sessions with Dave. And I love Dave. He's a big, gentle giant. I used to powerlift with Dave. Very strong human being. Very imposing human being. You sort of, you know, he says jump, you say how high. He's a very imposing gentleman. But, you know, I trust him implicitly, and he gave us the tools to get through this. And him and I have spoken a couple of weeks ago in terms of this next challenge. And back this time last year, we had no point of reference for this 24-hour challenge. You know, we didn't know what to expect mentally, physically, emotionally. It was kind of like learn as we go in terms of the challenge. And again, this time for the 60, we're kind of in the same place. Like, we've got our learnings from the 24. We know that physically we can get through 24 hours, but now this is 2.5 days. not just 24 hours.
So you're in about kind of four-ish months time, you're going to be flipping a tire with Tom as well for 60 hours or by yourself?
No, I'm going to be doing it on my own. Tom graciously declined. I understand completely. He's happy and I'm happy for him that we got through that together. I just want to push my body further now. Watching things, as I said, with James doing the 50 triathlons, and then those that know Ross Edgley, I get great motivation from what Ross managed to achieve swimming around the British Isles. Just a phenomenal human being. You know, the capabilities of the mind and body is just, it's untapped. Like, human potential it fascinates me, and what I'm capable of fascinates me. Like, I don't know where that edge is. I'm sure I'll find the edge of the cliff, but the 60 came about after watching King James's documentary several times, speaking to Will, as I said, with his podcast, and kind of throwing around ideas that, you know, I'd now scratched the surface and I didn't quite know how to satisfy that itch. I knew it was there, and once I'd got over the hump of, you know, the emotional come down and, you know, made peace with the tire, I wanted to do something else. And we were kind of throwing around ideas of time and distance and silly things like that, but there was no real focus. In November, we obviously have the Movember movement, and I saw a statistic that said that every hour, 60 men take their own lives around the world, which is, you can't comprehend that. It's one a minute around the world. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do. And it took me a couple of weeks to kind of work it through my mind and wrestle with those demons of, do I want to do this again? Can I do it? You know, there's a little bit of self-doubt in there. You know, am I even capable? Am I biting off more than I can chew? Is this idiotic? And then, you know, I see guys like James, I see guys like Ross doing these feats of strength and endurance. And like, yeah, you know, I can find fuel in what they did. And I feel it's a challenge, but having the people around me that I have around me, I've got the tools. I'm sure I'm going to learn on the way.
And like, I mean, I know that we said that we weren't going to talk about training at all. And like, from a physical perspective, don't particularly care about that. Like, it's a pretty phenomenal thing, is like the guys that you've mentioned. So examples of, with Ross and James and David Goggins as well, is that body will adapt. It'll keep going. But the training that I'm really interested in is how do you train for those dark places? Like, what does that look like for you over the next 20 weeks?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know how you actually train for that kind of thing. You know, I don't know if Ross did any sort of mental preparation in terms of wanting to be in the water for 12 hours a day, particularly, you know, 100 days in, you know, when he swam for 157 days. Who can actually prepare you for those extra 57 days that you still have to swim? For me, I know I can do the 24. As we said, you know, the training aside, physically preparing for something like that, it's a fairly basic movement to train. So that I know I can do, the physical side of things. Dave and I have thrown around some ideas about talking to some special forces, you know, retired, current special forces personnel, to kind of go through different situations, how they dealt with them, different training ideas kind of around that. Because the biggest thing for this whole thing is the mental toughness. And I'm not too sure there's anything out there that can prepare me for this thing that is in a rule book or in a training manual. It's kind of finding guys that have gone through that fire and those kind of moments where it's kind of do or die, perhaps, or do I quit, do I carry on, and what got you through. It's kind of learning from them and just taking their kind of tips on board. I don't know if there's obviously going to be things that Dave can teach me, self-hypnosis, ways of kind of, I'm a big believer of what Wim Hof does with his breathing and mindfulness. And I did, I spent some time with Nigel Beach, Element Health New Zealand, going through his modality, your breathing, ice baths, that kind of thing. So we're going to keep that in there as well, because that really did help me in the 24. And then the rest, I think it's just kind of, we adapt as we go on.
Yeah. And mate, I'll put you in touch with a few people after this as well, who have done some pretty epic things that I reckon would be pretty keen to just share some ideas with you. One of the guys I met on recently was a dude by the name of Paul Watkins, who last year won the 6633 Arctic Ultra, which is a 614 or 620K race through the Arctic Circle on foot, pulling a sled. So he probably has some ideas to help you through some of those dark times that are a bit life and death at times as well. So I'll flick you his details afterwards. Paul, if you're listening, mate, Gareth will be in touch. So what are you doing differently this time around compared to what you did first time around?
Well, a couple of things in terms of the organizational side of things. I'm learning to kind of let go of some of the control. I can't do everything. I have a business. I've got to make sure. Last year, I didn't realize because I was right in the middle of, you know, fundraising and training mode and all about the flipping and the PR side of things. And I took the foot off the gas a little bit with my business. So this year, I'm, you know, making sure that doesn't happen. So in that, I need some people around me to do the things that I did last year with the PR, with the media outlets, doing the social media, helping me fundraise, all that kind of stuff. You know, I found a venue. I'm still using the same tire, so that's okay. Helped me find sponsorship. Doing a documentary, Will and I have spoken about actually doing a documentary and filming this, which is going to add a different aspect to what we're doing this time around. So, you know, helping us fund that, lending services, lending time, that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, for the most part, we did it off our own backs last year. And I think for 60 hours, just being me on my own, I just don't think it's feasible. I'm not superhuman as much as I try and think I am.
So it's almost kind of delegating so that you can look after yourself better and focus on the important stuff.
100%. Yeah. And that's something that I've learned to do. I'm very much, the people around me that know me well, I'll do lots of things for people. I'll be there, I'll do it. I'm always about helping people. And for myself, I'll always do it. It's a lesson in learning to ask for help for me.
Yeah. And have you found that has maybe carried over into other areas of your life as well?
Yeah, it's carried over into my business life as well, learning to just let some stuff go and hand some stuff off and let some people do some things that are better at it than I am, that kind of thing. It's just learning that, yeah, and it's also kind of the Richard Branson school of business, you know, find people who are better at doing that thing that you don't like doing or aren't very good at, getting them to do it because that's what they do. And, you know, handing that control over to them, that's probably the biggest thing in terms of my business that I've learned from doing what I'm doing. Yeah,
interesting. And like it, within like personal relationships as well, has that kind of changed how you approach those too?
Yeah, the biggest thing in terms of that, and I posted about it last year and post tire flipping, you really learn who your friends are when you're looking at, they say you learn who your friends are when you start a business. I think it's also applicable when you do something like charity events. You learn a lot about the people around you. My circle changed dramatically during and post tire flipping in terms of who was around me and who's really there. And the people who were on the fringe that I didn't think were there stepped up and really became a big working part of that whole event. And I was humbled by that. And then people who I thought had my back didn't. And it's a really kind of sobering fact of life, really. You know, people have their own stuff going on and their own challenges and demons and all that kind of thing. And, you know, you kind of have to learn to just let that go and cherish the people that are there and that do step up for you. So, yeah, like let some friends go that I thought were friends for a long time and galvanized friendships that weren't as strong as I thought they were. which was really cool.
Life is fascinating, mate. It's super fascinating in terms of the way things go.
And the people that have reached out on social media, and the people that I've become friends with through social media and watching what I've done and seeing what Tom and I did last year, and just the support that we received from complete strangers, at that point back then, complete strangers to now people I would call friends, just through the support that they offered from somewhere else in the country or overseas that couldn't be here, just constant, you know, messages of support daily was really heartwarming and makes me proud of what I achieved to have those messages from people that, like I said, I now call friends. When people I call friends that are around me that don't even turn up, I'm kind of like, oh, okay. It's a huge learning curve.
Yeah. From a logistics perspective with the 60 hours, like what does that look like? Are you flipping the tire every second of that 60 hours or how do you break that up?
That is yet to be determined. I think, again, that's going to be a bit of a debate and a little bit of a experiment to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. We ran 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off for the 24. So one of us, and the 24, like I said, was about how much distance we could cover in that time. So we always wanted the tire to be moving. This time around, it's purely a matter of time. So I'm doing it for time. That's the significant number, is that 60 hours. So in terms of the modality, I'll probably keep to the same, like 10 minutes, I know I can sustain at a decent pace. This is a completely different kettle of fish now. The endurance of this is weighs heavily on my mind, and just kind of getting to the end is, it may change somewhat. We may look at running me, and look, for the most part, I'm going to have people around me that just tell me what to do. I'm just literally going to have one focus, one thing to do, and that's go out there, flip a tire. When I get told to sit down, I'll sit down. When I get told to, I need to go to sleep, I'll go to sleep. And that's kind of how it'll kind of organically happen. I'd like to get to about, I think I've got 30 hours in my mind before I take a big break, you know, before I look at potentially sleeping. If I can do 24, I think I can do 30 without sleeping. But after that, it'll just be what it is. We'll just kind of go by feel for the most of it.
Yeah. Other than obviously flipping a tire for 60 hours, like what are you hoping to achieve with this next one?
This time around, it's going to be a little bit more community-based. So even the venue that I'm doing it in is a lot more community focused. The first one that we did was at Millennium, and that's a non-profit organization. They had a loss last year within their team, a very sort of prominent figure, took his own life last year, that affected the Millennium Institute quite heavily. So it was obviously forefront for them. But it's just a big, anybody that's been to the Millennium Institute, the High Performance Center, it's just a big shed. It's just with a running track in it. And this time around, it's in my friend's gym. There's going to be lots of people there. It's a very community focused gym. I want it to be more about people. There's going to be more engagement. There's going to be more interaction with the tire, with me, the whole event. I'll put it out there now. I wasn't going to do it until later on in the week, but you can have an exclusive. So what I'm going to do is, we're going to open it up to, for the training side of things. So 60 people are going to get to flip the tire with me. And what I want to do is, what I've realized with social media is, people are engaged very superficially. So they see a post on social media and they like it and get the odd comment, and you get the, you know, the direct message going, this is amazing, you're so inspiring. Okay, cool. What am I inspiring you to do? Am I inspiring you to say something nice to somebody? Am I inspiring you to be kind? What is it that I'm inspiring you to do? So what we're going to do is take 60 people, and for 4 weeks, you're going to train. You can either follow my program. I'll happily write you a program. You can follow the training that I'm doing. And then at the end of the 4 weeks, you're going to come to Auckland. If you're living out of Auckland, you're going to come to Auckland and you're going to flip the tire with me. And we're going to do a bit of a flip-off. So it's going to be 5 minutes, and it's the max flips that you can do in 5 minutes with my tire. I know how many flips I can do in 5 minutes, and it's a lot. It's about getting people out there, sharing their journey. My vehicle is fitness and health and wellness, and I'm using that as a voice to kind of, you know, help people move, get people involved in this journey, start their own journeys. And then, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a competition because people do like competition. It gets people going. Life is a competition for the most part. And we're going to have a little bit of fun with it and hopefully start some conversations around mental health and wellness and the impact of you know, physical activity on our own mental health. And it's pretty exciting.
That's an awesome concept, mate. How are you going to select those people?
It'll be first in, first serve. It's literally going to be, we're going to open up for people to register. We're going to make it a $50 entry fee. And then that money will go to the Key to Life Charitable Trust, which is, you know, Key to Life and I Am Hope, which is the organization that I'm now associating with and doing the tie flipping for because of what they're doing and in the community, working with youth in New Zealand and helping them. So all the money is going to go towards them this year, this time around. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's I think it'll be pretty well received, and it's literally first in, first serve. And
awesome, man. That is very cool. When are you planning on opening that up?
So we're going to be doing it, it'll be around kind of logistics of when the gym can fit us in, because we'll do it at the gym that we're going to be doing it at, Miata West out in Avondale in Auckland. So it's just kind of working around their schedule. They've got some events coming up, so kind of fitting it in, and as long as they're happy with it, then we'll go from there. But it'll be officially announced on social media in a couple of days.
So this episode's probably going to go live maybe just after that announcement, so people keep your eyes out for that. And Gareth, I figured I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, how do you go about managing your mental health and your mental well-being?
For a while there, it took a big knock because I started my business and had my personal training business. So I was burning the candle at both ends. I literally set fire to the entire candle. Again, trying to do everything, you know, one man band type thing. And the main thing that I didn't realize mattered to me was being physically active. And for a big part of that, you know, being a personal trainer where I'm doing 8 to 10 clients a day, hour long sessions, 5 to 6 days a week, you know, it doesn't leave much time for anything else. And the last thing you want to do is train. And then starting a business on top of that was a lot to take in. And I'm an all-in personality. I dive in, you know, head first and learn how to do things as I'm falling. And just again, the toll on me was, I just didn't expect what was to happen. And just wasn't very happy, wasn't particularly nice to be around, I don't think. Grumpy, didn't want to do anything, didn't want to see anybody, was just tired. And I was this face of health and wellness to my clients and preaching health and wellness, but wasn't taking my own advice. Diet was terrible. And it just, I had to clean my act. I had to dig pretty deep and, you know, train for myself. You know, remove myself from some things and train. And as crazy as it seems, it is fairly therapeutic training and the type of training that I do, that I choose to do. I don't like running. I'm not a David Goggins. I can't run for miles by choice. I'll run across a road. That's about it. Dodging traffic. I don't choose to run. I've had knee surgeries, as I've said. So running isn't my preferred form of exercise. Mine is with a heavy bar in my hands. Whether that's squatting, bench pressing, deadlifting, that's kind of my therapy. And it took me a while to kind of realize that that's where I was most happy. That's where I got the most clarity for my business. I was able to kind of think things through, which again is an odd concept when you're training. You're supposed to be thinking about training. I've done it enough. I'm experienced enough as a trainer that I can think about other things while I'm counting reps in my head. And that was kind of my place of peace. So now I make sure I get a minimum of 4 training days in a week. Even when I didn't have the goals, once I finished doing the tie flipping, I still maintained a minimum of 4 training days. It wasn't always strength-based. It could be high intensity. It could be a little conditioning session. It could be a strength session. It could be a core session. It doesn't matter, but at least a minimum of 45 minutes a day, 4 times a week is what I need to kind of keep things level.
I'm similar. I definitely find that I need to do some form of physical activity probably, yeah, 4 or 5 times a week so that I'm just a better person, basically. Yeah. And again, it's variable.
It's time for yourself is what I've discovered. It's being selfish and going, you know what, I'm going to have this 45 minutes, hour 15, 2 hours, whatever it is. This is my time. And I've said this to friends. I've said this to business colleagues. You've almost got to treat it like a meeting. You've got to block yourself out this time and go, you know what, this is my time. And it doesn't have to be training. It can be yoga. It can be going for a hike. It can be going for a bike ride. But give yourself this selfish amount of time and go, no phone, no business. I'm not going to answer any emails. You know, this is what I'm doing for me because this is what makes me a nicer person to be around.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just mindful of the time, mate. I've got some questions that I'd like to ask everyone towards the end of the chat. The first is, what was the last uncomfortable thing that you did and how did you get through it?
Speaking on television, actually, was probably the last uncomfortable thing I've done. I've done podcasts and I've been on the radio with the guys at MediaWorks, but being on television was probably the hardest thing I've done, like speaking on television. It's something that you don't, I'm not in that industry. I've not been around, immersed in that. So that was probably the hardest thing. And how I got through that was by realizing that this is a story that I have to tell. People don't know the story. You know, I've lived it. Tom and I have lived it. This is our story and there's no script. So we don't have to worry about people knowing what we're going to have to say. It's just, you know, speaking from the heart and saying, you know, what it is and you know, we did it for the right reasons. We didn't do it for selfish reasons. So that's kind of what got me through that.
Yeah. I like that line that you mentioned in there. There is no script, which is, I think, helpful to remember for a lot of different life events. The next question I have for you, mate, is what's the next uncomfortable thing that you're going to do and why is that uncomfortable for you? Did I lose you there for a second?
Are you there, mate? I didn't get any of that.
Yeah. No, that's all right. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yep, cool. Next question. What's the next uncomfortable thing that you're going to do and why is that uncomfortable for you?
Probably as I touched on, the giving control to other people of what I'm about to do, relinquishing control. We don't particularly want to do as humans. We have this control, this fear of relinquishing control, I think, to some degree. I think that's probably, I've decided to do this 60 hours, and let people help me is probably the most uncomfortable thing. Allowing people to help, help me achieve what I want to achieve. And, in the faith that it's in good hands probably is probably the most uncomfortable thing. And how I'm going to get over that. Well, what's the worst that could happen, I guess? people have my best interests at heart. I've got to realize that. People are now seeing what I'm about to do as something pretty, pretty epic. And I have to accept that as well. And I have to, allow them in to help me. And I think that's probably it.
Cool, man. A couple of other questions for you, but I just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to have a conversation with me. And thank you for raising awareness around mental health, but actually not just having conversations about it, going out and doing things and inspiring others as well, and generating conversation around the stuff that you are, that you're doing. It's very cool. Be looking forward to seeing who Tyre flips off against you and how they stack up, and just kind of thinking logistically, is that a possibility for me at the moment? We'll see. First question, or next question, should hopefully be reasonably easy. If people are interested in you and in the stuff that you do, like, how can they follow along? Where's the best place for them to interact with you?
What was that?
If people are interested in the stuff that you do and want to follow along or interact with you, where's the best place for them to do that?
I think I kind of get...
Sorry, mate. Can you hear me okay now? Am I back?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, broken up a little bit, but I think I get the gist of the question. So people can follow me on social media through Giving a Flip on Instagram, same on Facebook, or through my own personal Instagram as well, Be It Entrepreneur, NZ. And we're going to be launching the Give a Little page, will be up as well, once Give a Little have basically orders it, and that will be 60 for 60. And yeah, there's going to be many sort of media days. We're going to hopefully get out there and do some talks and get out there with the I Am Hope guys and do some stuff out in the community. So there'll be lots of things going on that people can come along and have a chat and and that's kind of the thing. If people want to reach out and have a talk, my doors are always open. I'm no expert. I can only sort of offer advice through my own experiences. I'm always open to have discussions around people's lives, how I could potentially help, or just listen.
Rad, mate. Final question for you. Do you have a challenge to leave me and the listeners with this week?
Yeah. I think go out and do something for somebody without expecting something in return.
Yeah, I like that. I like that as a challenge. Gareth Edwards, thank you so much for getting uncomfortable with me today.
Thanks, Chris.
There you have it, team. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Gareth and I today. Make sure you get behind what's a pretty phenomenal effort from him. And also, if you're struggling with your mental health at the moment, make sure that you reach out and you have a conversation with someone and you ask them for help. And if you're the person that someone reaches out to and gets asked for help, then just make sure that you be there for your mates as well and support them the best that you can. Sometimes supporting them is just listening. Sometimes supporting them is directing them towards a health professional to help with it as well. But there are a lot of great resources out there for people who are struggling with their mental health. A lot of free phone numbers here in New Zealand, and I'm sure there are around the world as well. So if you're struggling, make sure that you reach out. Thank you to Jylan for your awesome editing skills. Thank you to my brother Jeremy Desmond for the amazing theme music. And thank you, as always, to you guys for taking the time to get uncomfortable with us today.